You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of September 14th, 2016, and we're updating this podcast in real time.
This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
I'm George Albor.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. And thankfully, you've downloaded the day one patch
for this podcast. This podcast was actually originally about Patch Adams, the hit film.
But after listening to our valued community, we decided to make it about video games instead.
Yeah.
But we will keep the patch spirit going and talk about fixes, mm-hmm. updates,
hot fixes,
dot releases,
yep,
point releases,
big changes coming your way.
We're gonna talk about the patching of games,
the patch culture, I would say, actually, right?
Patch
culture. I feel like we're at a point now with game patches, and I mentioned this briefly before the podcast, but they are so frequent and some of them so significant that, you know, looking at patches or patch changes used to be something that was kind of like nerdy insider thing. But
yeah, you're reading like John Carmack's notes.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah. I think it's so frequent now that it has become the way that you consume games now.
Yeah.
Like you sort of have to be aware. I don't know if the dialogue or the understanding of the way patches works is out there yet.
Mm-hmm.
But if you really want to understand what's happening in games, you have to pay attention to patch notes.
Yeah.
That's kind of crazy.
It is very odd, especially in the era that we're in, where software is both moving towards a paradigm of always being updated consistently, yet silently, but it's also being updated all the time with sometimes significant changes, so you'd be interested in knowing. So you have these weird two phenomena where like the software is making sure that you never notice, but it's easier than ever to push a change that everyone will notice.
Yeah.
You
and
know?
It's crazy because I feel like at the time of recording this, we're just getting over several really big issues around patches.
Mm.
So we've got the No Man's Sky debacle, which had a day one patch and people were concerned about, right?
Yeah.
We have, I think, a really interesting angle that we'll discuss shortly about patches in Madden and the sort of news reporting thing. And then we didn't talk about this before the show, but this is also well-timed because there's been some drama in the League of Legends esports community because some of the team owners have been antagonistic towards Riot for patching the game right before Worlds in a huge way.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're sort of mad about how frequent or what those patch schedules are like, right? Because these changes are coming out and it's not just like, oh, we made this little tweak here. It's like a fundamental aspect of the game has changed and it's on our terms. If you're a player of those games, if you spent money, or if you're involved in the esports stuff, like how much say should you have over how games are patched?
Yeah. If you don't like everyone being a panda character now, then you shouldn't play League of Legends.
I mean, like, yeah. it's weird. It's very bizarre, you know? And I think that I'm somebody who reads patch notes and has read them on the League of Legends side for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever there are these big changes like this, the game changes substantially.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times where Riot will put up a whole website that's like, here are all the huge changes coming to go over some of the bigger ideas about the patch.
Yeah.
And it's basically like launching a sort of mini game. Like it's a mini game launch, right?
Yeah.
And anybody who is paying attention to the game should be paying attention to those patch notes because huge aspects of the game can change. Characters that you love to play and are really good are gone the next day because they've been patched into garbage, or the learning curve for like how to use them in a new patch environment is dramatically different, right?
Yeah.
And we can see it right now, right? Overwatch just patched season 2.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God in heaven, heard our prayers, they have finally shut down Genji, essentially. Mm-hmm. They've nerfed Genji in Overwatch. And
we all said Blizzard please.
We said Blizzard please.
And they said K-thanks.
K-thanks. No probs.
Yeah.
You see people like mourning Genji because he's now significantly less playable.
There was a pretty funny music video that someone made, a parody of the I like the old Kanye, which was, I want the old Genji.
That's pretty good.
But yeah, so I think before we get too far into it, there's a really good article by Rami Ismail,
yes,
who's from Vlambeer Games, and he just talks about, like, from a developer's perspective, like, what it means to have a day one patch and, like, what types of like, technical and bureaucratic realities they're working towards when, yes, they release a game, especially, yeah, on consoles. I guess really exclusively on consoles. You could kind of do whatever you want on the PC. But I think it's just a really interesting,
it's a great
article to, like, sure, think of, because you don't really, as an outsider, you don't really think about, like, well, what does the actual certification process look like? How much time do you need? And he uses No Man's Sky as kind of a jumping off point to talk about it. But the bottom line is, because to get onto PlayStation or Xbox or Nintendo, you need to send a build of your game to them to certify that basically it's not broken and it does what it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
But that process has not really been modernized in the internet era. It's assuming that you're still kind of only printing things on discs with never the possibility of ever changing them.
Yeah.
Or probably even cartridges, really. This sounds kind of like a cartridge-based thing.
Yeah, totally.
And so this results in order to meet your release date, you have to walk it back at least 3 months, and mm-hmm. then you have to finish your game early enough to submit it in that 3 month window. And then you're also stuck with, like, well, should we just kind of sit on our hands for 3 months, or should we keep working on the game, or, like, what should we be doing? Maybe we should send something that can pass cert,
yeah,
knowing that we can patch it later to make it a better game because we need to hit our release date. Cert is months before our release date, which is kind of preposterous anyway. Like, it's just kind of a bad systematic
Totally.
Way of making
yeah.
poor choices.
Totally. You know? There's yeah. this great... I'll just read this line from the article that I really enjoy. It says, day one patches aren't necessarily a failure on the developers or the platform side. They are the result of people that care about what they make, trying to deliver the game the audience expects by the date they expect it,
yeah.
while everybody involved is struggling with outdated systems on cutting-edge technology.
Yeah.
Which is kind of depressing. But the inspiring thing to take from that is... nobody wants to make a bad game. There's yeah. no one in the world, and this is really difficult to understand for me, because you get a lot of people on the internet who go, oh, this fucking Sean Murray hates us.
Or lazy, like, devs.
Yeah, like, lazy devs, and Sean Murray is a liar. Like, yeah. he intentionally went out and told bold-faced yeah. lies and stuff. Nobody wants to make a bad game. They want to make the best game possible.
Mm.
Some people might promise more than they can reasonably deliver, and that might be their biggest sin. But at the end of the day, like, you know, we're dealing with technology, and it's complicated, and it's messy, and people are working in systems that were not designed to be efficient or be super helpful.
Yeah.
And it's despite that fact that we're still getting really high-quality games from really high-quality designers, that their work can shine even though they have to adhere to release dates to get things out and make money and get certification done on time and get an ESRB rating done yep. on time and all that kind of stuff. It's an accomplishment, but it's really unfortunate that for so many people, something like No Man's Sky and the patches that come and people saying, oh, this game shipped unfinished, it's just one of those unfortunate realities that is the reaction, and it will be the reaction, because I don't think people really respect that sort of the way the patches work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't think we're armed with the vocabulary to understand how games work in that way. And, you know, even if you wanted to go with the argument that, well, yes, a bunch of games are being released unfinished, that might be true, but we're in a place now where if a patch comes out day one and yeah. fixes that unfinished game, or a week later and adds more content or something, maybe that's okay, right? I mean, we have games like Ark Survival Evolved that...
that are not, like, officially out yet.
They're not even yeah. out yet, and have had so many patches and content yeah. updates, it's absurd. Like, is that... can we really say, oh, well, because they haven't officially come out, they're doing it right?
Yeah.
Like, should we be able to... and then... it's just, there's so many different ways that you can experience a game. And yes, some games come out and they're lucky, you know, like the devs specs everything right and
timing worked out.
Like, they did, nothing went crazy audacious. Mm. No core team member came down with an illness and had to leave, or no one, you know, one had a baby and had to take a huge amount of time off. And then
yeah.
a different engineer had to come in, and now they're working with shitty code.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've heard horror stories too of, like, you know, bringing a game to Xbox One and having to like basically rebuild it, right? I don't know if you've gotten very far in the Spelunky book, but they basically rewrote the code for the Xbox release because the PC release was just not servicing and not working on that platform. That would be such a nightmare to me. And to suddenly feel like, man, I made a game that is really good and I really want to get it into the hands of people, but I have to hit a deadline and I have to change the code and something might break and oh my God, what's going to happen? I'm putting this game out. No one's going to like it and everyone's going to hate me and I'm going to have ruined this thing.
Yeah.
Is a huge amount of stress and it's just kind of like really kind of a bummer when especially indie devs get hit hard by that quick perception, you know?
I feel like my thinking on this has matured a lot over the years because of like stories and instances like that. And also just because I feel like I've finally come to understand both like how much more complex games are now, just technologically speaking. Like it's hard to like make a game run because you have 300 people working on it or because you have all these different SKUs that you could possibly release it on. Mm-hmm. But also because whatever you release will be under this kind of massive microscope comprised of millions of people all sharing information about the game at the same time. Yeah. Whereas like back in the olden days when I was renting games Blockbuster, I'm sure half those games had huge exploits that I just didn't know about because it wasn't surfaced up by millions of ad hoc playtesters telling me that it was broken.
Yeah.
And like, if I kind of think of a thought experiment every once in a while where it's like, I wonder how much I would actually notice games being broken prior to a day one patch if I didn't have the internet telling me that they were broken.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, because inevitably you get stories that climb to the top of a subreddit that says, hey, I'm having this game-breaking bug or something.
Yeah. It's just the combination of the complication of development plus the huge amount of attention that even the smallest games get now in aggregate means that all of this stuff almost demands patching because you can never stay ahead of the mass of humanity.
Yeah, and what's crazy too is because we all know that patches are a thing, when these patches do come out, you often get community members who want as much clarity into the nitty-gritty of what is being patched.
Yeah.
It's kind of mind-boggling. Like, because you've got people on extreme ends, right? You've got, here's a good example. So Dark Souls 3 patch comes out, and their patch notes are like, weapons are better.
Yeah.
They don't tell you anything.
Yeah.
It is like the most bizarre patch. And literally,
they really are.
It's amazing. It's actually, I kind of love it.
Yeah.
Fans have to dig in and try to figure out, okay, well, what is the actual change in percentage scaling of great swords?
This number was changed from a 5 to a 6. What does that mean?
Exactly. Like, they tell you nothing, right? Nothing in those patch notes. Then on the other hand, you have something like Riot, which says upped attack speed from 0.2 to 0.4 because it didn't quite feel right. Yeah. And they get very detailed. And actually, their patch notes are beautifully written. I think if you're a game dev out there, check out Riot's patch notes because they are funny and humorous and well-written and they're great. And then you have someone like Blizzard that is sort of in between, right? So they come out with their patches, but sometimes they're a little vague, right?
Blizzard definitely tries to do, like, they try to do a switcheroo on you because they name numbers.
Yes.
Like, we raised this from 0.25 to 1, but it's really only, like, a couple bullet points and very little about, like, why this happened or what you did. You know?
Because the frame of mind isn't in there in the way that it is in Riot.
Yeah.
But then you'll get other things. So, for example, I watched a video of someone who was a Lucio main who was really mad because what he was saying is Blizzard snuck in a nerf to Lucio. Now, what this nerf is when Lucio was healing his teammates before this patch, it showed a certain percentage of how much his ultimate meter was going up with a number. So it would say like 5, and then it would say 6 or 7 or 8. Now that number would increase based upon how many teammates you were healing.
Okay.
So if you were healing nobody, you wouldn't have anything. If you were healing one person, it would be like 5.
Mm.
If you were healing two people, it would be 6, 7, so on and so forth. They changed the patch, so now it doesn't change as dramatically. So what he was complaining about was that a lot of Lucio mains were using that secondary piece of what often you and I would consider useless information to understand how many people on his team were hurt without actually having to look. So he was using it as a source of information.
Yeah.
And because that source of information was taken away from him without being explicitly described in the patch notes, he was furious at Blizzard for making that change.
Yep.
Is Blizzard at fault for not explaining that change? For not realizing the extremely weird use case of someone using a tiny little piece of information for their own situational awareness? I don't know. Probably not.
Yeah.
You know, like, where do you...
Where do you draw the line between your internal... Yeah. Like
notes, how much are you entitled to share? And the other thing, too, is, look, sometimes these patches are making changes because of bugs or things that they just find embarrassing. Like, do you need to tell everybody that... This thing that only happens to maybe 0.002% of the population it happened to.
Yeah. Or like you might patch out a bug that it doesn't, it might not officially kill the entire bug. It just makes it harder to reproduce or something. Sure. And so it's like, but if we call it out again, you know, the great dispersed eye of Sauron of the internet will focus in on it and be like, oh, now I know a new exploit to
look at. I mean, you see crazy shit, right? So in League of Legends, for example, they've specifically talked about how the people who make the call about whether or not to disable certain characters because of a bug make the call based not on how serious of a bug it is, but how many people know of that bug.
Yeah.
Because so they'll watch the Reddit, and if the post climbs to the top of like, oh, you can exploit this and it's replicable, then they'll take it down. But if it's relatively quiet and only a few people know to exploit it, they'll let that live.
Right? Well, plus because if you try to kill every single one of those, you're just magnifying the amount of people that know about it.
Exactly.
So it's like, uh-oh.
It's this crazy train, right? And especially with a game that's living like League of Legends or Overwatch, patches are constantly coming out. And now there's this weird like entitlement that game communities sometimes feel around patches and how much information is revealed and how quickly they patch that content.
I feel like that's the biggest thing that troubles me about the culture, which is... Because we now know that it's, you know, not easy, but, you know, viable to change game dynamics. People now...
Even on console.
Even on console, people now immediately, if they don't like something about a game, it's like, fix this. Yeah. Like, it's broken. I mean, it's like, is it broken, though? Or do you just not like it?
Yeah, or do you, you just know? Suck?
Yeah.
You just need to get good. I mean, the Rito Please meme is based on fans asking for a patch change.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the sort of thing where, you know, the golden counterexample to that is Super Smash Bros. Melee, where, like, this weird decade and a half long meta of a game that has never been patched has somehow given birth to a game where the meta strategy around it has evolved and changed, even though the game itself hasn't evolved and changed.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I wonder how many Smash Melees we're snuffing out in the interim by continuing to like tweak games all the time.
Yeah, you know? That's interesting. Where the sort of meta will adapt to counter some of those issues.
Like, you know, and I'm sure it's a very fine balance, but it would be in an alternate reality, it would be interesting to see if D.Va would have ever gotten popular without the patch, because people would have discovered something new about how to play that character.
Or maybe a new map would have come out that changes how they could use her.
In the same way that somehow now, like, Jigglypuff is a top-tier character in Melee, having suffered, you know, years and years of abuse.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, maybe it even creates scenarios where we create a sort of, like, George Lucas syndrome, right? Mm-hmm. Where because you have the ability to meddle, you will consistently meddle in your own creation.
I mean, that's just, like, science 101, where, like, the opportunity to observe and or, you know, interact is inherently influential.
Yeah.
Like, it will happen. If it exists, it will be used.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's no way it can't be.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's... And, again, I think on balance, it's better to be able to fix problems. Like, it sucks if your game is broken forever, but we are probably way past the point of no return when it comes to like the natural meta.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're in like the post-patch world.
Yeah.
Where it's so important, it's kind of crazy.
And it's almost mandatory for even like single player games now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so on a more optimistic side, I think we should talk a little bit, well, maybe optimistic, about the new Madden feature this year.
Yeah, we should talk a little bit about Madden.
So I think this is actually really exciting. So Madden has implemented a process with which they update the game every week based upon real-world events to change nothing in the game, as far as I understand, except for the announcer commentary.
Yeah.
So what they're patching in is, say, news that a football player injured himself during a basketball practice or something like that, or basketball practice, football practice.
Hey, that's big deal. Like, there's, so sidebar, some sports, maybe most professional athletes have clauses in their contracts that prevent them from doing things like riding a motorcycle or playing. That's so other, because it's like, if you injure yourself in your off time doing something stupid like playing basketball, it's like, we are now paying you millions of dollars to sit on the bench.
Yeah, yeah, like that's great. So anyway, so they've been able to patch Madden, not only to update with, you know, I guess theoretically they could update stats, right? Like if somebody did get injured, maybe they said, hey, you can't play with this person on your league anymore.
And I want to say they've been doing patches for a few seasons now.
Yeah. But now that they have announcers, they can make announcements like, oh, they picked this guy up in so-and-so high school, and he was really good, or whatever, right? I don't...
Well, we saw a clip where they were talking about just kind of like a noteworthy news item where this football player went back to his old high school and played a scrimmage game with his old, you know... And so it's also just color commentary.
Yeah. It's really cool, and not necessarily because it makes sports games even more real than they already are, which is, by the way, like shockingly realistic.
Yeah, it's kind
of
weird.
It's kind of crazy how good of a place sports games are these days. But I feel like it opens up the door for thinking about a way that patches can make games more present and embedded in our own context in a way that they haven't in the past. You know, we have like social impact games or serious games. We can now imagine them adapting and changing based upon current events.
Yeah.
We could imagine a Civilization game that gets patched where, hey, once you reach a certain era, you now have Snapchat or something. I don't know what that would be like. But I mean, I think we can imagine weird and clever ways to update content in not just, oh, we're changing some mechanical component of the game or fixing a bug, but we're pushing out something that talks about the present or maybe we're adding something that references another game experience. Or maybe this opens room for more comedy games where we can have video games that make jokes about actual real-world events. And maybe you'll replay the same platformer, but now they're making comments about Donald Trump's presidential campaign instead of something else.
That's in Civilization, where all of a sudden Donald Trump is...
No, isn't there a game called, like, Dictator or something? That'd probably be Puerto Rico, I guess, would be...
Donald Trump is now the dictator in Tropico.
Yeah, well, maybe you can build a wall in Civilization and like ask other people to build it, pay it for it.
Oh man. So we live in the beautiful Bay Area, home of quarterback controversies.
Oh my God.
Having nothing to do with performance on the field, by the way.
Yes.
I mean, like, we already knew, like, you know, I don't know why, but Blaine Gabbert is apparently going to be the 49ers quarterback this year. Colin Kaepernick, who was a one-time starter, has been sitting during the national anthem and speaking out against police violence. A representative from EA was saying that in a future patch, there will be some sort of commentary on Colin Kaepernick. Oh,
man.
And then they ended up not doing it.
Yeah. I love this story. It's so fucking crazy out there, right? That like we're at a point now where patches are so normalized that we could bring in something that is like the hot topic in football, right? Like Kaepernick sitting down has caused a bunch of controversy.
Yep.
People have coming out in support, thankfully, and some people have come out against him. There was a, I think it was Deadspin wrote an article where they talked about some of the NFL executives calling him a traitor, that they would like never work with him again and never sign him to their teams and stuff. But
Jim Harbaugh is all salty at like University of Michigan saying like, oh, I don't support him, but and then like apologizing on Twitter later on, like, God.
Yeah, because everyone's put in this uncomfortable position where it's like, I support black people, but not Colin Kaepernick supporting black people.
It's like, really? Tell me about how that logic goes one more time. Like,
it's insane. It's nutty. Yeah. And then we're at a point where EA has an opportunity to say, hey, you know what? We're not going to ignore the political context of our time.
Yeah.
We have an opportunity to seize the day and force NFL fans to confront what is an ugly aspect of the actual NFL, which is, you know, like executive control and politics and race. And hey, you know what? This beautiful game that we play is not removed from our culture. But instead they say, nah, you know what? Video games gotta be video games. We ain't gonna say a thing.
I feel like it's also just, and I think Owen Good at Polygon points this out, where like, if they were to do that, where does that stop for them?
Well, I mean, and here's the thing. I'm not blaming EA. Yeah. Right? They have a very close relationship with the NFL. I don't
think they have a monopoly with the NFL. Yes.
Well, the point being is, I don't think the NFL would be very happy with EA
if
they decided to air the NFL's dirty laundry. Mm-mm. Right? The NFL wants to be this... I mean, that's the whole problem with Kaepernick in the first place.
Yep.
Is the NFL wants to create this illusion of a unified front of family-friendly content that can take you away from the troubles of the modern day.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get people who are like millionaires who say, you know what? I have an opportunity of being on the stage to get people to notice something I care about. Whoa, 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 whoa. We can't have that. That's absurd.
Yeah. Well, and also like, this game might be killing people slowly after they play it.
Exactly.
And also, that guy really hit his wife a lot. You know, it's like, where do you even stop? You know, if you're EA, then it's like, oh geez, like, are now, is our job now to like be the kind of weird warts and all NFL mouthpiece, you know?
Right,
like,
exactly.
I don't know.
ESPN does it, right? Like, ESPN reported on Michael Vick's dogfighting controversy. Yeah. They reported on, you know, despicable Ben Roethlisberger stuff, right? Like, they commented on this stuff because that is sort of their role.
Right. There's a journalistic aspect to it because, and this one is more, this is a business partner aspect to it where it's like, yikes.
So the problem is EA, because of patches,
has
the opportunity to say, we're creating a true-to-life simulation of football.
Yeah.
And as part of that, we're going to be simulating true-to-life the announcer experience.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh, we bit off more than we could chew. Let's actually not simulate the actual announcer experience.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again...
Well, it will be interesting to hear, because football season hasn't officially started yet, it will be interesting to hear how the professional live announcers... Because you know there's guidance from the NFL to be like, do not talk about this, talk about this, you know.
This is chewy shit. I love this kind of stuff because it's so bizarre and so weird. And esports is going to be dealing with it in like 2 years' time.
Well, and esports has the added, I don't know, might be a benefit or might be a disadvantage of the people that make the game have a much stronger hold over the people that play the game.
Yes. Yeah, you know? For sure. Yeah. Which is kind of true of the NFL. I mean, you just said they're not allowed to ride motorcycles.
It is true, but it's different when you kind of own both the media apparatus and the league.
Yeah.
Where, like, ESPN could theoretically take the NFL to task. What is the equivalent of ESPN in the esports world?
That's true. You know? Yeah, there's like not really isn't
it's,
one.
It's weird. So, I mean, maybe it's ESPN. ESPN is actually taking on... It would be actually, because ESPN is now getting serious about esports, it would be fascinating to hear their take on this.
Oh, ESPN's take on the Madden stuff.
On the Madden stuff.
I wouldn't be surprised if they did. I mean, they have an esports arm, but I guess Madden isn't treated as an esports yet.
Right, because...
Dude, then we're talking Madden. We're talking about announcers commenting on the digital personas of announcers in a video game that simulates actual real-world football.
It just keeps going.
And turtles all the way down. I think this says, going back to patches, though, right?
Yeah.
Is we're at a time now where we have an opportunity to do really... cool stuff.
Yeah.
By pushing updates either silently without...
Not just technical stuff, too.
Not just technical stuff. Like, pushing updates that everybody gets, that changes the game, changes how people consume... I mean, this doesn't even change the act of playing NFL. I mean, you'd just be playing Madden or whatever, and you're fine.
Yeah.
But then the announcer says something that might get you thinking about something you might not have otherwise thought about, right? Mm. There's a really cool opportunity there to use patches in a way that people just didn't normally expect before.
Yeah.
In terms of changing... things, right? We can do things. It's almost like episodic games in an even more micro way.
Yeah. You know? And persistent. Like, you don't have to wait 3 months till the next episode comes out. It's next week.
Or maybe the games that you play in these micro, you know, in these episodic games aren't like 5 episodes. Maybe they're 30 episodes.
Yeah.
And each gameplay session is only 20 minutes. You know, like, there's all kinds of weird ways we can imagine pushing content out to people in a way that sort of fundamentally changes the experience of playing those games. It's a cool opportunity. Whether or not people are going to seize on it is a whole nother thing.
Yeah, it will. I suppose if it comes from anywhere, it'll probably have to come from the independent folks first, and then see the big corporations have to figure out if they can do it in such a way that doesn't upset their other agreements with sponsors and so forth.
And then, of course, there's always the concern that if people are playing that are just not connected online, then what experience are they getting?
Yeah. Yeah, which like they'll get none of this stuff. But I mean, I suppose that's just that's the sacrifice, right? Like that mode of playing a game in a vacuum is going to be a rarer and rarer thing.
Yeah,
and probably won't even really be designed for at a certain point.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. It makes me kind of want to play Madden this year, but then I realize I'm terrible at Madden. It would just be...
Exactly.
So maybe I should just buy Madden, and instead of watching the NFL this year, I'll just let it run computer versus computer.
There you go. Like... Listen to the announcements. Your fantasy football team will be ruined, but sure.
Oh, don't worry. I'm sure they have a fantasy football mode inside of Madden. Like, I can just live all in the Madden grid. It'll there be you fine. Go. All right, let's leave it there. Experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our announcer box. Do they have a box?
Yeah, press box. Press box. We're up there. We're actually just in VR goggles looking at it. We're not in the stadium. Come on, that's for chumps.
Are you kidding me? Yeah. We do have huge beers and hot dogs, though. leave us a star rating. It helps us find new audience members, and that's great for us.
Yep. All right. Until next time, everyone, thank you for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Goodbye. Every time we